From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds. The sequestration federal budget cuts begin on Friday. As we've been reporting, it could result in a cut in vaccinations for children in our state. The cuts are causing some detained immigrants to be released early. Washington Senator Patty Murray says Democrats have a plan that would avert the sequester.
Our legislation meets the Republicans halfway. It would protect the families and communities we represent from slower economic growth, fewer jobs, and weakened national defense. And it would allow us to move past sequestration towards working on a fair, comprehensive budget deal that provides certainty for American businesses and families.
Will sequestration budget cuts affect you? Will they affect your workplace? If you know something about this, give us a call at 206-543-5869. That's 206-543-KUOW. Seattle Times columnist Danny Westneat has written that the cuts are a very small percentage of total spending. We talked to the Washington State Budget Director last week, who told us that the federal cuts are a small part of the total state budget. Will they have an impact, but will it be minimal? I'm at 800-289-5869. You can write to us, conversation at KUOW.org. Our guide to sequestration, David Leonard, who's the Washington bureau chief for the New York Times. His new ebook is called Here's the Deal: How Washington Can Solve the Deficit and Spur Growth. He joins us from the studios of the Christian Science Monitor in the other Washington. David, thanks for your time.
It's nice to be on.
So Republicans are blaming the president and Democrats of exaggerating the impact of these mandatory budget cuts, which begin on Friday. The skeptics say we're not going to notice it that much, and if we do feel the pain, something can be done afterwards. Are they right?
I don't think we're going to notice any kind of big change or even any kind of change for most of us on Friday. I think over time the impact is going to grow, and what we don't yet know is how much will it grow by. Will lines at the airport be a lot longer? Will you notice that national parks are much less easy to get into or parts of them are closed? Will, if you rely on aid for special needs children or if you are a low-income family, will you notice some of your benefits cut? And I think part of the big uncertainty between the parties here is exactly how much we're going to notice it.
If the skeptics are wrong and if what the Democrats and the president say is right, these sequestration cuts begin to really hurt, can Congress just kind of swoop in and fix it?
Yes, from a legal, technical, legislative perspective, certainly Congress can. The question is, will the politics allow for that? And we now have a situation in which we have had a series of deficit-cutting measures over the last couple years. The first couple in 2011 were largely spending cuts. Then at the turn of the new year after President Obama was reelected, we got these tax increases on high incomes. Now we're about to have, at least for the time being, another set of spending cuts. And so the question will be, if lawmakers decide that these are actually causing real pain and that they need to, for political reasons, undo them, what do they undo them with? And so far, there has been no common ground between the parties. The Republicans have said, we will do no more tax increases. And the Democrats have said, we're not willing to talk to you about a deal unless the deal includes both spending cuts and tax increases.
Grammar question. Should we call it the sequester or sequestration?
You know, we've been batting that around ourselves. I think at this point you can get away with calling it either, because certainly there are people in this Washington who are using both words.
It's an odd word and kind of an odd thing, too. It's as though Congress put a gun to its head and threatened to pull the trigger. Is this a manufactured crisis?
It is a manufactured crisis, but I'd put two big caveats on that. Manufactured crises are almost as old as humanity, right? Odysseus tied himself to the mast. There are all kinds of ways in which people do things in order to force action or force inaction, and this is part of that long tradition. And the fact of our deficit is not a manufactured crisis. The fact is we have created a government and promised ourselves benefits that are larger than the taxes we are willing to pay to finance that government. And although that is not an immediate crisis because foreign investors remain exceedingly willing to lend us money, eventually we're going to have to deal with it. And the kinds of programs we've focused on so far, the kinds of programs in the sequester, aren't going to be enough to get a solution. A solution is going to have to involve some combination of Social Security, Medicare, and taxes.
And I want to dig deeper on that in a moment. If you've got a question about the sequester or sequestration, David Leonhard is the Washington bureau chief for the New York Times. His new ebook is called Here's the Deal. We're at 206-543-5869. That's 206-543-KUOW. It's toll-free 800-289-5869 or write to us, conversation@kuow.org. Also, you know, we hear from some that this is going to hurt hard, but we have had a hard time finding anyone who can tell us this is happening to me on Friday or this is happening to me next week or in 2 weeks. If you're someone who can tell us that definitely sequestration is going to impact your life somehow or your workplace, give me a call, 206-543-5869. That's 206-543-KUOW. We'd like to talk to you. David, I've been reading that the sequestration is a big deal now, but it might be just be the first of the big budget battles we're going to see this year.
Yes. So after the sequester, we also will have some sort of fight over the continuing resolution to fund the government. This is the sort of thing that led to a government shutdown back in the mid-90s and the showdown between Bill Clinton and Newt Gingrich. There's some debate about whether that's really going to be a nasty fight or not. I think Republicans would be perfectly happy to take the sequester level funding for the government and just draw it out, draw it forward. And so there's a chance that that wouldn't be a huge fight. And then we say, well, okay, is there some way in which a deal to cancel the sequester might be more likely later than it is now? And I actually think that's plausible because right now Republicans feel like they have to stop giving in to Obama, right? They gave in to him on tax increases at the end of the year. They folded on their threats to use the debt ceiling to force spending cuts. And I think it's really important to Republicans with their conservative base and their voters in their districts to show they're willing to stand up to Obama. It seems more plausible to me that Congress could then come back later and do some combination of things when that combination didn't feel like it was a fold on the part of Republicans.
Let's go to Jess, who's listening to us today in Tacoma. And Jess, you've got some evidence that this sequestration is going to affect you?
Yes, I've heard that. So once after Friday, they should send out furlough slips that the civilian workers will be losing or going on furlough one day a week for 8 hours.
Excuse me, where do you work, Jess?
I work in a hospital down on Fort Lewis.
Okay, so it's a military hospital, and you're being told that you might get a furlough notice next week.
Well, the civilians will, and what's going to happen is the military that works there will increase their hours. So right now, they've already increased. We're 84 hours every 2 weeks, and that could go up to 96 hours every 2 weeks to make up for the loss of the civilians. So,
how are your coworkers taking it, Jess? Is it just kind of, oh, we'll just deal with this? Is there concern, panic? How would you describe the mood?
You know, it's really pretty. It's just frustration over whether, you know, they're going to make a last-minute deal and we're all kind of getting ready to do this for nothing, or is it going to, you know, actually happen and we all are going to have to live, you know, tighten our belts a little harder for a little while longer. So,
yeah, that's a really good question, Jess. And I'll throw that to David Leonhard. David, it's Wednesday. This is supposed to happen on Friday. Should we pretty much assume that nothing's going to happen between now and then?
Yes, you should assume that nothing's going to happen between now and then. I much prefer probabilities than certainties, so I don't want to put a 0% chance on something happening. I mean, if Iran started a war with one of its neighbors in the next 48 hours, I think you might see the defense cuts reversed. But barring something truly unexpected, this will not be like the fiscal cliff where we see, let alone a rush to a last-minute deal, we're not going to see a last-minute deal.
As you reminded us, these budget battles are not completely a contemporary phenomenon, but it just seems like Groundhog Day. It seems as like every 6 months, something else is coming up, and we're back to square one, and there's the latest crisis, at least from outside your Washington. It seems as though Congress is just completely bogged down and unable to come to any kind of resolution.
Yeah, I absolutely understand that, and it seems that way because it is that way, right? We've now had the super committee, we've had the fiscal cliff, we've had the debt ceiling, we've had the sequester, we've had all of these different deadlines. I think part of the problem here is that there is no solution to this problem that is popular. If you ask Americans, and this is something I talk about a lot in my new ebook, whether they are in favor of a deficit solution, they say, yes, absolutely. And then you say, okay, well, do you want to increase taxes on yourself? And they say, no, absolutely not. Well, what about less Medicare or Social Security benefits. No, no, not that either. What about a smaller military? Well, then you start to get some people saying a smaller military, but not huge numbers and not huge cuts. And when you look at the budget, the federal budget is essentially four roughly equal size pieces. Piece one is Social Security. Piece two is Medicare and Medicaid. Piece three is the military. And piece four is literally everything else. And so that's why you see the sequester and these cuts focused on things outside of Medicare and Social Security. That's why you don't see talk of tax increases except for on high incomes. And that's why Congress has a hard time solving this problem, because if someone were to come out with a sort of solution to our long-term deficit problem, it would leave that person very vulnerable to attacks from their opponents, attacks that would play well politically, because we Americans haven't yet figured out what combination of tax increases and benefit cuts we want to solve the deficit.
So we're blaming Congress, but they're just reflecting our own kind of conflicting desires on what to do about this.
Yes, Congress definitely deserves some blame. I think the state of partisan politics deserves some blame, but we deserve some blame as well. And I think it's important, as people think about this, when they think, boy, why can't Congress get this right? I think the next question to ask yourself is, okay, what deficit solution do you favor? We, at the New York Times, we put together a deficit calculator that you can still find easily enough online. Just Google New York Times deficit puzzle. It's a little bit out of date now, but it's basically still correct. And so you can play around and come up with a mix of solutions. But if you don't want to do that, just sort of think it through and say to yourself, where would you put, where would you rank order military cuts, Social Security cuts, Medicare cuts, and tax increases, not just on the wealthy, but on everyone? And I would say that no one of those, with the possible exception of Medicare cuts, would be big enough to solve the problem.
That's a great budget simulator. Have you aggregated people's solutions who've gone to your website to go through that simulation to see what sort of the Vox Populi has to say about what should be done?
We did. I don't pretend that what users of our website who happen to tweet out their solutions is necessarily a scientific sample of the Vox Populi. But we have, and it's really quite interesting. So you see things like people are more willing to cut the size of the military than the pay of existing members of the military, which I think is it kind of makes sense when you hear it. People want to treat current members of the military fairly, but they're open to the idea that we don't need a military that's quite so big. I find even more meaningful than that aggregation, some of the polling that's been done on this. And what you see is that people still, by wide margins, do favor higher taxes on the upper income households. And people are open to some kind of changes. But by and large, it's hard to find anything approaching a majority for a long-term budget solution. Doesn't mean we won't get there.
Yeah. David Leonhardt is my guest, Washington Bureau Chief for The New York Times. His new ebook is called Here's the Deal: How Washington Can Solve the Deficit and Spur Growth. We've got Becky on the line, and she's calling us today from Blaine, because I was asking, is the sequestration going to affect your life? And Becky, I understand your husband is works on the Border Patrol?
Yes, he's a Border Patrol agent up here in Blaine. And we're set to lose about 42% of our pay on Friday.
You've gotten some documentation that says this is happening to you starting on Friday?
Yeah, we received a memo last week about what would happen to us if the sequestration happens. And about 10% of that is furloughs. That would be one day each week or each pay period that he wouldn't be working. We wouldn't have pay for that. And then the other 32% of that is made up of something called AUO and FLSA for Border Patrol agents, which is an automatic overtime. And right now they work 10-hour shifts, and mm-hmm. that'll be going to 8-hour shifts.
So what's your husband think about this?
We are pretty upset about it.
Yeah.
We were just, saving money and getting ready to buy a house, and now it looks like that's not going to be able to happen.
Now, it officially starts on Friday. Are they telling you that these cuts to your husband's employment start Friday, or is it after that at some point?
Well, the furloughs will be starting sometime after that.
Okay.
But the changes to the overtime and their shifts are going to start, I think, on Friday.
Becky, thanks a lot for your phone call. Let's go to Bob, who's listening to us downtown today. Bob, I understand that you're a federal employee, and what are you hearing about how the sequestration will affect you personally?
Well, what's going to happen is on Friday it goes from the if category to the when category, and that's when the furlough business starts, and they start processing for our agency. They start, I would assume, start processing the notices. They have to give us 30-day notice before they put us on furlough, and then they will roll out the plan as to how they want to distribute the furlough, whether it's one day every pay period, or there's various ways they can do that.
So, what is your agency, by the way, Bob?
What's that?
What is your agency?
Environmental Protection.
So, like, if this happens, like, one day a month, you'll just stay home and you won't get paid for it? How big a deal is that to you?
Well, if it's just one day a month, then maybe not too bad of a hit. But if it turns out to be one day a pay period or one day a week or something like that, then, then it begins to add up.
So the details are a little fuzzy right now.
Yeah. As far as I know, from the information I'm getting from our agency, is that we don't yet know the details yet. So,
hey, Bob, thanks a lot for calling. I appreciate it. David Leonhardt, the economy is recovering from the 2008 recession. This probably won't kick in by Friday, but will the deficit problem fix itself as it did in the 90s under Bill Clinton when the economy was so strong?
I think the medium-term deficit problem could, in fact, fix itself. And it's not just fixing itself. It's also the fact that when you add these spending cuts, if they actually stick, with the tax increases at the end of the year, with the spending cuts that happened in 2011, with the end drawdown of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, the government's actually done a lot of deficit reduction. And so in the medium term, I think the deficit is now on a path over the next decade in which it actually won't be a particularly big problem. And the weakness in the economy is a big problem. So I think over the medium term, our bigger problem is unemployment and slow growth. Over the longer term, however, our deficit remains a really substantial problem. The combination of the aging of society and, even more important, our uniquely high healthcare costs in this country relative to every other country in the world create a real problem for us.
David Leonhardt in Here's the Deal, How Washington Can Solve the Deficit and Spur Growth. You've got a chapter on why taxes are not too high. You talk about the false promises of tax cuts. And you also write that to spur growth, which you see as essential, government must invest. Well, the government did invest a substantial sum, I think it was about $800 billion, in the stimulus package that passed early in Obama's first term. Some people point to those investments, like the one in Solyndra, the solar power company that went bankrupt, as a reason why government investments don't work. Are there counterexamples? Why do you think invest is the right way to go?
There are huge counterexamples. The internet is, in fact, a counterexample. The Pentagon built the internet. Radar, the jet engine, penicillin, the modern biotechnology industry, the modern aviation industry, a topic of particular interest to your listeners, all of these depended in a crucial way on initial government investment. The problem is that a lot of early stage investment just isn't profitable for the private sector. Because the inventor of something doesn't actually capture most of the returns. When you go out and buy an iPhone, the person who invented the internet and mobile phones, they don't get a cut. And so if the government doesn't do it, we'll do too little of those investments. And we have this incredibly rich history in which the successes of early government investments vastly outweigh the failures. Now, that doesn't mean that we should just have the government spending money willy-nilly. I think one of the problems right now is that we're spending too much money on the present and not enough money on the future. We're not investing enough, and we're spending too much on various forms of consumption, including things like wasteful health care.
David, Bill writes to us. He thinks he's got the solution here. He writes, an overwhelming percentage of people favor increasing taxes on the wealthy. This is a no-brainer, writes Bill. If we increase taxes on the wealthy, would that deal with this problem?
It would help deal with the problem. And I think one of the things that you sometimes see descriptions of, well, clearly taxes on the wealthy and high incomes can't come close to solving this problem on their own, thus they're not even worth talking about. And I disagree with that. They could have enough of an impact on this that they could be a substantial portion of the solution. But I don't think they can be anywhere close to the whole solution. I don't think we can fund the kind of Medicare and Social Security budget increases we're looking at simply by raising taxes on the affluent. And that's why I think it needs to involve some combination of tax increases on the rest of us and changes, which is a nice way of saying cuts, to the future growth of Social Security and Medicare.
David Leidenhardt is the Washington Bureau Chief for the New York Times. His new ebook, Here's the Deal, How Washington Can Solve the Deficit and Spur Growth. It's a great kind of summary of all these issues and some other ideas on how we can, might actually be able to solve these problems. David, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks so much for having me.
From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds.